Our Old Testament reading today is Psalm 100. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. Shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. Worship the Lord with gladness. Come before him with joyful songs. Know that the Lord is God. It is he who made us, and we are his. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name. For the Lord is good and his love endures forever. His faithfulness continues through all generations. This is the word of the Lord.
Our New Testament reading today is from the book of James, chapter 1, verses 16 through 18. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. Do not be misled, my dear brothers and sisters. Whatever is good and perfect is a gift coming down to us from God our Father, who created all the lights in the heavens. He never changes or casts shifting shadows. He chose to give birth to us by giving us his true word, and we, out of all creation, became his prized possession. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
A few years back, I came across a fascinating story. There was a man in Iran who decided to rob a bank. And he had an ingenious plan. He went to a wizard who gave him sold him an invisibility spell. He paid 5 million rials, it's about $500 in US dollars, to this wizard for an invisibility spell, which when he tied around his arm would mean that other human beings couldn't see him. So this man paid the wizard his money. The wizard gave him the spell. He tied the spell on his arm, but the wizard was clear that the man it would only work on the man, not his clothes. So the man ties the invisibility spell on his arm, takes his clothes off, walks down the street to the bank, walks in the front doors, naked, walks behind the counter and starts trying to grab bills out of the teller's hands. Imagine his surprise when everyone looks right at him, tackles him, and holds him there until the police come to arrest him. How do you see me? I have an invisibility spell. Silly guy. Everybody knows invisibility comes from cloaks, not spells. For you Harry Potter fans. Invisibility spells don't work, right? He was deceived. Granted, if you're willing to buy an invisibility spell, I've got one to sell you later. But this text I just read starts out with this line, brothers and sisters, do not be deceived. We had this this theory in seminary called the don't stick beans up your nose rule theory. And you parents will know this. If your house has a rule that says don't stick beans up your nose, why do you have the rule? Because somebody did it, right? We had one of those really unfortunate experiences where Abby at like 18 months stuck a raisin up her nose so high that she couldn't get it out. In like 10 p.m. driving in the dark, freaking out, like can't even tell if there's anything up there. Yeah, if there's a rule that says don't stick beans up your nose, it's because somebody was sticking beans up their nose. If James says, do not be deceived, do not be misled, brothers and sisters, why? Because we're being misled and deceived. And James says, do not be deceived, brothers and sisters. Every good and perfect gift comes from above, from the Father of heavenly lights. I think this is a profound picture on reality that is one we far too often forget and neglect. and trade in for a different reality that says the good things in our lives are much more the product of our own effort and work. That we ourselves are responsible for taking care of us. That we are responsible for getting what we need, for providing shelter and security and safety and prosperity. Do not be deceived, brothers and sisters. Every good and perfect gift comes from above. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. That's what Kathy just read. Is there any other way? Gratitude, thanksgiving. Gratitude is being thankful. It is ready to show appreciation and to return kindness. I think it's an important response to reality. If indeed every good and perfect gift comes from above, what is my response? Aristotle did not like the concept of gratitude. He believed in virtue, but he thought that gratitude implied indebtedness. And that if a person, in his view, a virtuous human was someone who didn't owe anyone else anything, who was in some ways self-made, that you were responsible for yourself and you didn't owe anything else. He believed that a virtuous person, and again, we might be getting a little close to some core American values here, was a person who pulled himself up by their own bootstraps. We love those stories, right? Where'd you get your bootstraps? This idea of independence that Aristotle had of being greater than connection and greater than connectedness runs in the face of the reality we believe in as people who believe that every good and perfect gift comes from beyond myself, from somewhere else. If this goodness and wonderfulness in my life is something that I am not responsible for, then the only sensible way of living my life is one with gratitude, with humility, with a recognition of my indebtedness. Because the truth is, the longer I live, the more I realize that the things I appreciate most, the things that are best about my life, are things that I don't get to take very much credit for. Right? Think about it for a minute. I mean, your existence, the fact that you are here and breathing air and thinking was not a choice you ever made. You got to exist. Thanks, Mom and Dad. In fact, most of who you are, right? Did you choose your name?
No.
Given to you. Did you choose the way your brain is wired? If you didn't choose even your personality, right? I mean, all is gift, right? We owe our existence to our parents, our grandparents, our ancestors. We owe our intelligence, our looks, our athleticism to other people. I didn't choose my IQ. That just came to me. I didn't choose how well I can throw a ball. I mean, might have practiced, but even my ability to work hard and make wise choices isn't something I can chalk up entirely to myself, right? I had teachers, I had experiences, I had parents. We owe so much to so many people. We owe so much to our God, who is the giver of every one of these good gifts, that the only possible way to live in response is, of course, gratefully. Let me read the definition again. Gratitude is being thankful, ready to show appreciation and to return kindness. Because this is exactly what we ought to be doing with our gratitude and with our gifts. The story starts out, and I love this. I think we forget this too. I've brought this verse up about 20 times in the last year of preaching here. But Genesis 1, the most repeated word, God created, said, "Let there be light." And the evening and the morning was the first day, and God said, it is good. Right? First statement about creation. It is good. And on the next day, God separates the water above from the water below and says, it is good. And the next day, God calls forth greenery and says, it is good. And then he makes birds and fish. It is good. And then he makes animals. It is good. And then he makes humans. It is very good. Extra good. This is good. How much did the humans make of it? No, it's a gift, right? This is good, and this goodness comes as gift. And at the end of that, on the first day, the seventh day, God says, this is special. I want a celebration, a Sabbath, a time where you're not supposed to be working. Instead, you're supposed to be remembering, right? This is baked into the rhythm of being human, that every 7 days we stop. And if you remember the commandment from Exodus 20, remember the Sabbath day. For the Lord your God made the heavens, the earth, the sea. Every 7 days, we are called into stopping and remembering the goodness of the gift. Remember, we stop our work because we're supposed to be remembering that it is not our work that made this. These incredible gifts of our own lives are not our own doing. We get to participate in them. We get to cooperate. We get, of course, to cultivate these gifts. But they came as gifts. I love the Old Testament rhythm of life that God sets up with the Israelites when he pulls them out of Egypt. And of course, in Egypt, why is an Israelite valuable? They make bricks. And your value is precisely the number of bricks you can make in a week. And that's what you're worth. When God gets them out of Egypt, why does he want them to think that they're valuable? Knock off your work and remember that you are my people. You are valuable because you are my children, not because you make bricks. But this is kind of hard to get through our heads, right? We still have this nagging... I'm preaching to myself here as much as anyone else. I still have this nagging conviction that I'm only as valuable as the amount of things I can produce. That if I'm going to feel okay about myself, I'd better be preaching good sermons on Sunday, right? We're all there. It's not just you. But God appears to be trying to move us in a different direction because he pulls the Israelites out, and then they're required to get together 4 times a year. 4 big parties, celebrations. The first one, Passover, a celebration of God liberating them from slavery. Did the Israelites liberate them? Did they finally pull together the revolution, have a great general with a cool strategy and the right weapons to take on the Egyptians? No! God liberates them. It comes as gift. And every year they gather together and celebrate and remember that God is a God of liberation who finds people who are enslaved and moves them towards freedom. What a good God. What a good gift. And then they have the Festival of Shelters where they live in tents. They'd make like, not tents back then, it was just like, let's cut some branches off of trees and make makeshift shelters and sleep in the backyard because we remember that God took care of our people while they were wandering in the wilderness. A celebration again of all as gift. And then they get together for the celebration of first fruits and celebrate that this fruit coming forth from the earth is a gift from God. And yes, we as farmers and workers partner with this. We cultivate it. We tend to the crops. But the earth and the crops produce the fruit, and we are grateful recipients of these gifts. This rhythm of life was one of continually coming back and remembering just how great a gift everything is. What if this is true? How does this change the way you think about your life? About what you really have to get done today? About what the highest point of your life might actually be? I don't know about for you, but for me, I keep thinking that the big things in my life have to be some monumental accomplishments, right? I'd better write that book or discover that thing or whatever it is, make that money, build the thing. That's what makes, that would be the most important thing about my life. But if every good and perfect thing comes down from above and is a gift, maybe the most important thing any of us do is celebrate with gratitude. Humbly recognizing that, appreciating, savoring, entering into these incredible gifts, right? If I, as a father, love to give my kids good gifts. It is so much fun to just thrill them, right? We tried surprising them with a trip to Disneyland at one point. We had it all planned out. We got in the car like we were taking them to school. We had it worked out with their teacher, who also happens to be their grandma, that we were not, in fact, going to school that day. We were getting on the interstate and driving south. And so we did this. We got the kids. We all headed off to school. And then instead of coming here to school, we got on I-5 and headed south. And Abby's like, wait, where are we going? It's a surprise. No, we're supposed to be going to school. Abby, I think you might like what we're doing today better than school. No, I'm going to get behind in my schoolwork. What are we doing? And I'm like, I wanted to surprise her. I wanted to like drive into Disney. I'm like, fine, I'm just going to tell her now because she's freaking out. Abby, we're taking you guys to Disneyland instead of going to school. Awesome. No, I have to go to school. What? This is better. It's okay with your teacher. It's fine. We can take care of a few math assignments, right? Not a big deal. You've got the rest of your life to go to school. Let's go to Disneyland. No! Full meltdown. Because we decided to take her to Disneyland. Heather and I in the front seat, just like, oh my goodness. Wow. Come on. Like, did not foresee this one going this way. How often do you think our God is up there saying, look at what I am giving you. And we're like, but school! I couldn't possibly, but. We are given life. We are given family. We are given not just one kind of food, right? Like I think about, I mean, if you were a cow, here, have some more hay. What are we having tomorrow? Hay. Day after that, maybe some grass. Awesome. We get to eat tomatoes and the stew. We have a feast over here with like 10 different kinds of soup. And, oh, this is a gift, right? I think there's nothing we can do to honor our God and the giftedness of reality more than entering into it fully and participating in it and enjoying it. And of course, when we recognize these things as gift, it opens us up to generosity so much more. We are willing to pour forth the gifts that we are given freely to the people around us because we recognize they have come freely to us. I didn't earn all this. And so I don't have to make you earn it before I'm willing to share mine with you. This is gift. Today we celebrate the harvest, the abundance. As Jim said, I love it, just the tomatoes everywhere this time of year crack me up, right? Like I last week drove through a tomato slick on the way down here. Like one of those trucks took a corner too fast and literally like the road was an inch and a half, 2 inches deep in tomato juice at that point. Like you just hit it and smell it. It was like, fresh tomatoes. Love it. It's just, there's an abundance. This is the reality God is inviting us into. This is what Jesus does. We celebrate, I love that we're celebrating communion today too, because we are gathered around a table with more than enough. A table built on gratitude. You may have missed, you've heard these words over and over, but do you know what the word Eucharist, how this comes from? It's a Greek word. It's what we call this communion. And it literally means thanksgiving. In Greek, eucharisteo is to give thanks. You know why we call this thanksgiving? Jesus, this is Luke 22:17, took the cup of wine and gave thanks to God for it. Then he said, take this and share it among yourselves, for I will not drink wine again until the kingdom of God has come. Then he took some bread and gave thanks to God for it. Then he broke it in pieces and gave it to the disciples, saying, this is my body, which is given for you. Do this to remember me. Jesus gives thanks, breaks the bread, which he says is his own self, and gives it out. This is so profound about the nature of all things, right? That Jesus is giving thanks for the gift of his own existence and life, which he is freely giving and pouring out to his disciples who are with him. That might be all we need to know, right? Jesus is, eucharisteo, charis is grace. The you is joy. This is joyful grace. Jesus is joyfully offering, he's offering to give up his own life and doing so with gratitude and joy in the recognition that this is all grace. That is what I want to enter into. That is what we are going to do as we celebrate this Eucharist today, as we enter into this grace and joy and thanksgiving at God who has offered us God's self, at God who invites us into offering ourselves for the people around us. We all owe so much to so many people. But this indebtedness does not diminish us, but instead frees us to offer what we have been given to those around us. I think Aristotle was wrong. Our connectedness is so much more important than our independence. My favorite kid's book came as a gift. One of our friends who'd been visiting Hawaii brought back the book Too Many Mangoes. Anybody read it? This should be a more popular kid's book than it is. Apparently, it's just a local Hawaiian cult classic. But the book is Too Many Mangoes. And the story is of Nani and Kama. And Nani and Kama are over at their grandparents' house, and they're helping Grandpa in the backyard, and Grandpa says, it's time for us to pick the mangoes. And there are so many of them. They fill up an entire red wagon with these mangoes, and there's far too many for them to eat themselves. So Grandpa tells Kama and Nani to go and take some mangoes for themselves, and then he says, take the rest of these mangoes around to the neighbors. Knock on each one of the doors on this street and ask them if they want some of these mangoes. So Kama and Nani do it, and they go up to the first house and they knock on the door, and they say, Mr. Chin, do you want some of these mangoes? And he says, yes, I want some of the green ones because I love green mango with soy sauce and chili. If you haven't had it, it's amazing. He takes some green mangoes and he says, thank you for this. In return, here's some guava jam my wife just made. So they put that in the cart. They go to the next house and knock on the door. Hey, we've got too many mangoes. Do you want some? Yes, I'd love some. I want some of these that are just starting to get ripe. And here, I have some extra bananas. You take the bananas. So they put the bananas in their cart and they go off to the next house and knock on the door. And they say, hey, we have too many mangoes. Do you want some? Oh, that'd be great. And they take some of the ripe mangoes because she wants to make mango bread. And she says, you know what? Here, I just made some muffins. Do you want some muffins? Since here, take them and put them in their cart. And they go to the next house and knock on the door. And that person takes some mangoes and gives them some extra papaya that they had from their tree. And by the time they get done with the street, they have no more mangoes in their cart, but their cart is just as full. And they come back home to their grandpa and they say, Grandpa, I thought we had too many mangoes, but look at all this. And so they have a feast with all of this food that they brought back home. And they said, wow, Grandpa, isn't it wonderful that we had too many mangoes? We all have too many mangoes. They might not be mangoes, it might be tomatoes. It might be time. It might be energy. It might be financial resources. It might be compassion and care. We all have been given so much. And we all have each day as a powerful opportunity to, like our God, give thanks, recognizing that this, like every good and perfect gift, is it coming down from above, from our Father who delights in us, who has called us God's first fruits. That's my New Living Translation cut that out, but it's the God who delights in you is the God who has made you God's first fruits. God is cultivating you. And this too is a gift. Could we have the elders come forward? We're gonna start with communion first, and we are going to take part in the gifts God has offered us, and then we are going to respond by offering our gifts back to God.